Yeah, so hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Zero Trusts Given. I am your host, Tom Tittermary. With me, as always, is my brilliant, wonderful co-host, Tom Gianello. Say hi, Tom.
Hey, everybody.
So today, guys, we have a super special episode. We're taking a look at Zero Trust as a whole, as a practice, and in a really meaningful way. So I have with us a couple gentlemen from Red River, and we're going to get in deep about how they approach the topic and how they run workshops with individual customers to discuss on the topic. So I'm going to let you guys introduce yourself. Quint, if you can go first.
Yep. Thanks for having us. Quint Stramberg. I'm the DoD SE manager over here at Red River. I've been here about 12, 13 years. A lot of experience in the DoD. I was actually in the Navy, got out, and did some security while doing that. Worked at an integrator for a while, and I've been over here doing the engineering here at Red River.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. James Connell here, head of cyber at Red River, and been with the company for about 2 years now, and really excited to be helping with cybersecurity. My background's open source intelligence and cybersecurity for the last 20 years. So thanks for having us.
All right. Awesome. So guys, just to tee up the conversation. So Tom and I are Zscaler, right? So we have a very specific part of the Zero Trust thing. But as we always talk about, it takes a village, right? So there's been other episodes where we've brought in other vendors where we team up together to bring better results around this whole Zero Trust thing. And we talk about the notion of Zero Trust as a whole, what it should be, how people should look at it and implement it. But one of the biggest questions I get is, Tom, Zero Trust, it's a buzzword. Tom, Zero Trust, where do I get started? I know I got to be done by 2027. People don't know, like, hey, where can I go have an aggregate discussion about, you know, Zero Trust, how we're looking at it and how I can move forward. So I wanted to have you guys on the show today, yeah. Right? It seems like the practice you guys have in. If I think about what I've heard about the methodology of how you go about it, it seems like exactly the way that I see a lot of these agencies and MILDAPs should go about this. So I'll leave it open to you guys. Could you guys tell me a little bit about the program? We can go from there.
Good. Yeah, so thank you very much. I think the key thing for us was we had to start where everybody else did, right? You essentially have a multi-vendor environment. You know, no one in the DoD particularly has a handle on all of their capabilities. And so we started with our partners. We started with our vendors. So we started with Zscaler and others and sort of said, hey, can you send us over how you map to the DoD strategy, these 152 activities? Now, again, some of them are more advanced. Some of them are target, right? So we start with the 91 target, but we go through a mapping process for all of them. But before we get into the nitty-gritty tactical side, you've got to start with, you know, can I level set with everybody? You know, we've got people in the room that have very advanced understandings of IT and technical requirements and NIST and standards, right? In DoD particularly, most people understand the idea of defense and protection. And there's a stovepiping that sort of comes along with sort of that pillar structure that we have. So we like to start with the culture. And so what we found was we had to level set and go in and have a conversation. Right, get everybody comfortable with the fact that Zero Trust is an idea about culture change from end to end across all of the areas that you're involved in within the security stack. And so that is sort of how we started our process, right? One, for us, we started to go through with the OEMs and map out where they align and what they covered of the 152 activities. But with the groups within, you know, our customer, if you will, we needed to work with them on the, what is the culture of Zero Trust? What does it mean when we say, you know, trust but verify, right? You know, assume breach, you know, having to re-authenticate at every stage, whether you're an app or a person or, you know, a device.
Yeah, so it's I think the culture piece, we talk about technology a lot as engineers. You know, typically we're having engineers in on the podcast. And we talk about engineering because it's a math problem, right? Yeah. And it's, if I add 1 + 1, it equals 2. And that's, you know, that's typically the response. Well, it's always the response you get around 1 + 1 = 2. But the cultural piece is like a much softer piece of this, right? And it gets to be a really interesting part of the conversation. So when I'm talking to folks about Zero Trust, I'm typically walking into an environment where, you know, somebody has spent 5, 10 years building an infrastructure and a protection mechanism, right? And what I run into from a cultural perspective is I run into a lot of beliefs and very few thoughts, right? And it's, I talk about this notion of like thoughts and beliefs. I like to have a million thoughts and very few beliefs. And it goes back to the Zero Trust conversation, right? Trust but verify. What can I pull around the data around each of these individual application interactions, user interactions, to be able to make better decisions, right? And take a step back and say, it's not enough that I've got the perimeter around this sorted out? How am I getting really granular about how I get these individual pieces? How do those cultural conversations typically go with you guys? Because I almost find that the most difficult part.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, look, again, part of the wonderful discipline in certain areas of IT and certain security is we're checklist motivated, right? We have a beginning, a middle, and an end to a task or a setting. But, you know, threat actors are evolving, and the way we use the tools we have evolve, the tools themselves evolve, some of them end of life. So we can't rely on the tools alone. And the other thing is that, you know, you might have your cyber team, and you might have your IT team, and your firewall team, and hardware team, you know, storage or data. And these teams have to work together as part of Zero Trust, right? The strategy is it's across all the pillars, there's cross-cutting. And although we do want to micro-segmentation, we want to imply that, we want to challenge any authentications that come in at different stages, that doesn't mean that we can't work together. And so it's been very difficult to sort of sit down and say, okay, you know, that stovepipe nature that I don't share, I'm very controlling of what I have. Now we have to have a conversation. We have to develop the thoughts and concepts around an ecosystem. And that's true in the DoD. Obviously, in the commercial world or in the civilian government, it's also a change, right? I mean, we have to understand that we have to work together, collect telemetry data, for instance, from all of these different areas and bundle it together and centralize it. That's how we get better visibility. So these are, you know, we understand how our area of focus, our specific job works and the tools that we work with. Mm-hmm. But really a lot of that education is how do we work in an ecosystem together? What is the point of doing this? Mm-hmm. Because I think most people understand what Zero Trust is as an idea, but they may not know. And again, the DoD did a particularly good job with giving us, you know, an iterative, very, very broken down structure to work with to have a very deliberate process to get to some form of zero trust by 27.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? So all credit to Mr. Randy Resnick, right? Like I've spent my amount of time in his 152 controls, right? So 91 target and 61 advanced, right? I run into a lot of people where I have conversations and, you know, it's beholden upon us as these individual vendors, right? Tom and I are a part of this. How do we affect and which ones of those controls do we affect? But I see this trend in industry when anytime, you know, either I talk to another vendor or a customer engages with another vendor, they get very buttonholed and very down in the weeds very specifically,
yep.
Right? Forest from trees. They focus on the tree that they involve in, and they talk about very specifically like how I can affect this one field in the Excel sheet, right, with my product around this one individual thing. But what you guys are doing, which seems really interesting to me, and it goes back to culture is, sure, you can go through and check these individual boxes, and I want to get later on, remind me, I want to talk about like variants of degrees of compliance. Well, it's the difference between a checkbox and a really functional way to do these individual things. But once I've checked all the boxes, the big part is how does all this work together, right? And you use the great word ecosystem, and that also goes back to culture. There's really a thought process about you have to change the way that you think about how these different parts work together. Could you speak to that part a little bit?
Yeah, I think for us, one of the key parts were the same sort of thing. So the strategy was rolled out. We had the 152 activities. We worked with a number of partners and OEMs, as our customers have to try and understand how they map and how they comply or how they help us meet that control, right? How do they address that activity as it's listed? And you can imagine that from a vendor's perspective, you know, it's almost like, you know, we need more green on the sheet,
right?
We need to, you know, sort of have people in the executive space like, I need that all filled in. How do we get there, right? And again, I understand that, right? Everybody wants to feel like they're well represented in that. But there are areas where out of the box, we meet those or we can achieve those or help our customers achieve them. And others, we need other vendors to be plugged into us, right? We support that. We enable that capability, right? And it was very difficult for our customers to understand the difference between what enablement meant and whether they had all of the stack to do that or whether they actually had this within the tool. And then, of course, there's the other part of it is like, well, I have these tools, but have I implemented essentially, you know, those capabilities? Did I turn them on or did I configure them correctly?
Right.
All of these other parts of it. So from our perspective, once we went through an exercise of mapping out, you know, these different capabilities, right, even not talking about vendors, but capabilities that were in the tech stack, right, the software hardware lists of our customers, we started to map that out. And then by mapping that out, we basically then went through an interview process with the customers and said, okay, you know, there's 152 activities. Let's ask a couple of questions. We got it down to about 77 questions that we felt really covered essentially those 152 in a way where we had enough insight to say, do we have something, yes or no? Are we working on rolling that out? Is it in place and is it at a level of maturity where it meets that target right now, right? Not even talking about the advance. Let's just talk about the target. And for the first time for a lot of our customers, that gave them the ability to have visibility into where they are, right? You can imagine somebody who's running a Zero Trust program, you know, Larry, you're head of our IT group. Where are we? We're doing great. What does that mean, right?
There's a lot of greed in the sheet.
Right. And so from our perspective, it was like, you know, we get it, right? Just providing a visual. Because when you're saying, well, what do you need in the way of resources? I don't know. You know, how much time is it going to take you? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm. Right. So we were able to provide a sort of a tool as part of our, you know, again, the questionnaire provides the cultural overlay, gets everybody bought in, makes them feel like they're in a safe place that they can share with one another, so they're not finger-pointing at one another about, well, what do you mean you're not doing this, right? We're not getting there. We're having that conversation about level set. And then we say, well, how do I know where we are? And so then that conversation starts in regards to, let's honestly share with an organization like Red River the information they need so they can plot it for me into a tool that then I can hold a piece of paper up in the air and say, this is where I am. This is where, based on the DoD guidance, they've given me a time frame. They've given me how long, like a Gantt chart, I should take to do that. Mm-hmm. And so now when we meet with our customers, once we have that exchange, we can say, you haven't started this by the DoD you should have already completed this, right? How does it map to the mission that you're in or the service you're in, right? Because they have slightly different guidelines and guidance as well. And so the power in that again, success breeds success, is I had a conversation, I feel like my team are better educated on what we're trying to achieve here, not the mandate of doing it, but what we're actually here to do, which is to protect the warfighter, right? To make us safer, to make us more secure. And then beyond that, to give leadership and the teams in the trenches, I'm used to checklists. Now I have something tangible to work on. I know that I'm red, and I need to get to orange, and then I need to get to green. Mm. And what does that actually mean?
Yeah, it's just, it's funny. I draw a lot of corollaries. Tom and I have done a lot of work with the Federal System Integrator and DIB community around CMMC, right?
So
It's a daunting list of individual requirements. Controls, and oftentimes, right, these are presented to security teams that already had a full week planned, right? They've got 40 hours. Yes. Hey, by the way, now take these 250 controls and map them cleanly against your environment. And by the way, you lose every federal contract if you don't. It's terrifying. Mm. So you can break into a conversation and say, hey, so just the way that you were talking about, where are the gaps relative to what we're working on, and start that conversation around that piece. But most people that I talk about, we get back to the term buzzword around zero trust. It's like, I know I have to do zero trust. I'm terrified about it. There's these 152 controls. What you're talking about really seems like a clean methodology to get from, you know, that fear, uncertainty, and doubt about, like, I don't know how I'm going to get there, to, all right, here are my timelines and plans, and now I can actually punch it into my work cards and schedules to figure out how to get there individually. Like, do you have any customers that you've been talking to where, you know, you've experienced that from the pre and post, where it went from, like, this thing out in the ether down to, like, all right, we have marching orders and a plan?
I mean, we've had a number of success stories, and in fact, again, part of providing the insight, the visibility, we've been contacted by their leadership, right? These different, you know, because of course we're all part of an ecosystem here. So, you know, you put your hand up and say, hey, I'm this division and I've got some visibility now and I actually have a plan and I know how I understand in a new way what Zero Trust is for me, and I have an actionable, you know, stepping stone to get there, right? It's not some sort of dream or some fuzzy thing or yeses and noes nodding in a boardroom. It's actually, I know what I'm doing and what I need to do next, how many people I need, how much it's going to cost me, what tools. But we were surprised. Again, we shouldn't have been, but it's one of these things. Things evolve.
Yeah.
Right. When leadership said, well, you've now spoken to a number of our missions. Can you give me essentially an executive dashboard? Because if you could do that, I could now see the status of multiple programs. And so we're like, sure, I mean, let's work on that, right? And so we have some very talented people that sort of said, yeah, sure, I could shake and bake that. Mm. And they come back and said, is this sort of what you're looking at? And what the takeaway from that was so now we have, you know, six different groups mm-hmm. mapped out. And the leadership could say, well, that's interesting. You know, in the identity pillar, three of my teams are in green. But I have one in orange, right? So they're working on it. So that's fine. I would expect to see that. But one's red. Why don't I take the ones in green and sort of analyze those programs mm-hmm. and see what they did and help this obviously struggling team to potentially, you know, is it a licensing issue? Is it a tool issue? Is it a people issue? Is it a knowledge issue? And so I can start to analyze licensing and accelerate programs by getting these teams to work together. They didn't have that visual before. They didn't know what the status of their different teams or groups were. Mm. And so as a result of that, we're seeing an accelerator there, which is like, you need to go and start working with them to get that visibility, because me and the leadership, I have to plan for resources across my entire team, into my entire mission. And now this is a way that they can do that. So this was one of the other areas of value that we saw from our customers sort of putting that pressure on us.
Yeah. So try to kind of change in talk tracks a little bit,
yep.
right? Going back to, you know, the 152 controls are mm-hmm. daunting, right?
Yes.
And some of those controls can be pretty broad mm-hmm. in terms of, I'll give you one that's one of my favorites. I'm a old hat data authorization guy. So that's like, that one is near and dear to me, right? Because it involves tagging and access. And, you know, I think people say we need to protect the data and stop talking. And that problem, when you really start peeling the onion there, right? So it's, okay, well, I need to have really clear context about all my unstructured data, my semi-structured data. Mm-hmm. The data, semi-structured, I call like cloud services 365, right? It's a unstructured data that sits in a structured yep. thing. And then my structured data at the same time, right? And I think I've run into people that say, yeah, I'm doing DLP. Because they have a DLP policy somewhere for something, right? And they assume that, hey, no, I checked the box, it's green, right? Like, what kind of level of granularity, if we could hairpin it around that one, right? If I'm accomplishing what that, the spirit of that law, instead of the, you know, the words in that law, I'm doing data loss prevention and managing my data across structured, semi-structured, and unstructured, and I'm mapping it against identity, and I have clean tags in the back end. But a lot of people be like, no, I have DLP turned on in Zscaler. I have it turned on in my 365 instance or whatever. How do you guys dig into something that's like that to give a little bit more insight?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, so again, what is it and what it isn't, right? So our engagement is more around the technology side.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much focused on, do you have the people you need to implement this? Do you have the policies and procedures in place, right? We see that as a next stage and next step for us, because again, with every iteration, mm-hmm. you know, our customers come back to us and say, hey, you helped me out last year, get visibility. Can you run that again mm-hmm. to essentially let me know how I've improved, right? Mm-hmm. As a status check. And now, you know, the guidance that was released in regards to the NIST mapping towards the, you know, and of course there was an update recently. So every time our customers come back to us and say, hey, can you update this? Can you give us more visibility? It's really that interview that we have with the team, right? Mm-hmm. And again, we basically block out 4 hours, you know, again, after we've had the workshop and after mm-hmm. we've asked for the hardware-software list and the, you know, what is their ATO and, you know, we collect all of this information from them. We want to have an interview with them for 4 hours. I mean, sometimes it's less. It depends on who's in the room and, mm-hmm. and what have you. And we're getting into the questions of, like, you know, what does this actually mean? How is it implemented, right? We have our technology team, our engineers, going through trying to understand exactly what you're saying. Is like, talk me through what your process and procedures are and the technologies you're implementing and have from the people in the seats that are doing the work
mm-hmm.
on that actual and activity by activity. And so we're getting, you know, and it's a very raw conversation,
mm-hmm.
right? because you're getting into the detail that you're talking about. It's like, you know, how is this all working together? And let's be honest with ourselves, because that's part of it, is we just want to say yes and move on.
Well, there's the angle, too, about like, no, I'm green. I already put this to bed. I checked that box.
Right.
And then you get into that, well, could I justify if somebody came in and inspected this on the far side,
right,
if I went through a pen test? Well,
and that's where Randy Resnick's really sort of poking at, right, this sort of red team that includes the zero trust aspect of it, not just simply do you have a vulnerability risk, but how are you implementing and mapping to zero trust in that process as well.
Randy's getting a lot of airtime today. My dream is one day to get Randy on the show. Randy, if you're listening, that would be amazing, but it would be awesome to have you in the chair and sitting down and talking to.
Well, and so in part of the conversations we've had with Randy, and part of the mission that we had, right, is like, well, again, going back to that trust but verify, right? How do we determine that, you know, Okta's working nicely and working the way they should with Zscaler, and Zscaler's working with CrowdStrike or what have you. You really have to put that in a lab environment, right? And so we built out this multi-vendor lab environment to test these controls. And part of the success in that conversation is we didn't just sort of say, hey, we're here to promote the features and capabilities of the vendor, right, of the OEM. We went in and said, look, how are customers implementing this? What are the challenges they're actually trying to protect themselves from? And how are these things correctly implemented? And so we basically work with the customer first use cases, working with, you know, Zscaler and others to, you know, what are you seeing? What are the challenges the customers have? How can we go and sort of with a catalog of like, not his capabilities, but here are problems that we know that you're dealing with and managing, and this is how all of this ecosystem works together. And that's been a great tool in this conversation of trust. And, you know, one of the challenges I think that Randy brings up quite a lot as well is like, you know, you're selling a thing, a widget, but tell the customer, tell the DoD how they're going to get value out of that widget and how it works with all the other widgets.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, right? So fun fact about your host, Tom Tittimer here. You know, I'm in my formal education, I'm actually like a comparative literature and languages guy. So I tend to, you know, take words and break them apart. What are these? I think a lot about what I think, right? So we say zero trust so often. You say a word enough times, it loses meaning, right? Zero trust. I say it's the new cloud in terms of like, when you wanted to justify, I want to get a meeting with a customer. Well, I got to talk about cloud. And I used to blanket turn down, and two jobs ago, I would blanket turn down. If you gave me a meeting and said, we want to talk about cloud, decline the meeting. Because cloud's not, that's not a topic of conversation. Like, I got to get in the weeds and have an individual conversation about this. So we talk about zero trust, like, it kind of loses its meaning. You see it on everybody's board when you go to a show. Every vendor's got zero trust in AI. I'm calling us out specifically.
Yeah.
Those are the two that are up there. And then, no, I'm the zero trust guy. I want to offer this up, and this is, I'm you know, This may or may not work. We'll find out, right? I was thinking about the word trust last night, and I was like, what does that actually mean in this context? And there's a word that I thought of that you could actually supplant in there, which might, you're not saying trust anymore, so you actually have to think about the word again.
Okay. Right?
And the word I want to throw in there is faith. Right? So if I think about, all right, so let's break down the definition. I could swap out, like, I have a lot of trust in Tom, I have faith in Tom. They're almost synonymous in a lot of ways, right? But the connotation of that word faith means that I don't have all the data, but I'm going to believe in XYZ, right? So if I think about zero trust, right, if I put somebody on a network and they have access to all these things, I have faith that that person, since they went through the security training and they're a good person, that they're only going to go to the places that they're supposed to go, right? I don't have data around that, right? I can collect data about what they did after the fact, but right, I'm basically giving them, I'm putting my faith in that individual that they're going to go and do the right things. I'm giving them trust in that way, right? So let's give a little bit of meaning back to the word trust. But trust for it, like zero trust for me at the end of the day is, faith is a great thing for many parts of my life. I don't think it's solid security policy to lay as a baseline for 7 million enlisted.
Right.
If I go across and I say, we're going to start with faith and I'm going to trust that you're all going to do the right things. And I think the big model here is, no. What's all the data I can collect, right? How do I validate and verify this every time before I hand somebody access to a thing? And it goes back to trust but verify too, right? So I've laid all that out. So one, I don't know what you guys think of that, but like in the context of what the work that you guys are doing, what is the gap that you're filling with services and the products that you can put in the mix to take that faith out of the mix and replace it with real data people can make decisions around?
Well, I think if I'm correctly answering that question, right, there's a couple of things that are gaps that we're sort of providing or addressing. One is that you know, most people in security and IT understand why they get up every morning and what they do, mm-hmm. right? Certainly from a DoD point of view, right? That's part of their core training and job. Regardless of what role you're in, you know why you're there, mm-hmm. right? We do that quite well. But I think to your point about the word, right? And that is the first thing that we started with, which is like, how do we make this not intimidating? How do we cut through the noise and get round to the core idea? And then people are like, oh, I totally get this, right? Because they live in a house. They lock their door. They shut their doors. They don't leave the windows wide open, right? They understand, oh, geez, I probably should go around and do that. They push the key, you know, the button on their keys and lock their car. I mean, they understand the principles. When you make it a physical conversation, right, mm-hmm. you know, or use an analogy of, you know, working through the airport and the security checks, or when you go into a building and they give you a badge and they escort you around the building and say, hey, you have to go here, and then you have to walk back out. We understand that from a physical world point of view. And so those principles, you know, with a coaching, with a training, with an education, we just sort of make that real for people. And certainly that helps. And so once they understand that, then we say, okay, well, let's talk about the handoff between technologies and systems. You mentioned it before, right? Who is in my ecosystem? You know, walking through the front door or getting into the castle, right? What systems do I have to keep people out that I want to keep out, mm-hmm. and who's in, and how do I know who's in, and where can they go with it? You know, can they get through the crown jewels? Right, probably have more guards there. Right, that's different than the bathroom. Right, so there's those principles. Right, there's a concept of, you know, there's a reason why between the castle we have woods. Right, we have that area where I can see anything approaching from the woods, and then I have spies in the village. Right, that's your senses, that's your telemetry data in regards to what's happening. You know, did I have somebody logged in here, and did they access that file, or did they try and access that file, or what data are they collecting? Are they trying to exfiltrate? Are they trying to print? Right, did they come in on the weekends? Right, all those sort of concepts that we understand in this industry, those sort of concepts. And so when we relate what zero trust is and to those human understanding, right, or that training that we are all inherently getting or have, and then we sort of say, okay, well, now we have to go through this exercise. You know, if the crown jewels is the data, the Australian accent,
right? yeah
the data, if it's the data, right, and identity is around who gets in, who or what, right, gets in. You know, I don't want a person with a camera to get in my castle, but I don't want a thing with a camera, a drone, to get in either, right? To be mm-hmm. able to take photos of this, right? So is it an application? Is it, you know, is it a device? Is it a API? Is it a person? What is it that's accessing my ecosystem, and what sort of restrictions do I put around that, right? So we go through that education piece. We go through a very methodical process that, again, I compliment. The 152 activities is a very prescribed way and structured way, which is great for large organizations like the DoD to go through. And giving a time frame puts that pressure, right, puts the pedal on it of figuring out, you know, from the leadership point of view, how do I get my people, my policies, and technologies in place to get there? Mm-hmm. And then our commitment, right, mm-hmm. from our organization is to help organizations understand, right, how do these things work together? How do I make sure I understand the most up-to-date, have turned everything on, right? How do I talk to the OEM about understanding how they work together in an ecosystem? If I have a gap, how do I make sure that I am purchasing the right technology for the ecosystem I have? Because I'm not going to rip and replace. Right. I can't make 27 if I rip and replace. I have to go with what I've got and then mm-hmm. fill those gaps. And then, sure, I can come up with a continuing strategy, right? Zero Trust is not a date. It's not a set it and forget it. It's an ongoing, evolving strategy. Right. So, you know, if I need to level up, which I will at some point in some way, because the threats, you know, keep increasing, and velocity and speed and sophistication. And there's real skin in the game, right? We're protecting the warfighter here. So I know why I'm doing it. So you tap into all of that and raise all boats, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, right? That the notion of how do I get to zero trust with what I've got in the house, right? So I was having a conversation a while back with a gentleman named Wes Gooley, brilliant guy. He was a zero trust lead at Transcom at the time. A friend of mine that's in the room, and he'll be on the next show, is there with me when we had this conversation. But he said one of the most brilliant things, and this is early days of zero trust. And Wes Gooley said to me, he goes, Tom, there's a lot of Leroy Jenkins zero trust pilots going on out there. So if you don't know Leroy Jenkins, go YouTube it, hit pause, come back, right? You'll have a fantastic chuckle. And the notion is, right, like I'm going to grab what I have, and I'm going to run down a lane, and then things are going to go how they go based upon what I have, right? So I have to imagine, like, you want to get as far as you can with these individual customers you're talking about, with the tools they have in-house, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of these things, I see a lot of zero trust pilots collapsing under their own weight. And the reason that they're collapsing under their own weight is the complexity of the individual products they're starting with.
Yep.
So what's the inflection point in the conversation where you say, look, this is a phenomenal product that you have in-house, right? But I want to recommend a new product injection here, because this will cover you for 1,000 users. But when you start talking about the admin, the complexity, the management, and the security gaps that additional admin and complexity is going to bring, there's potentially another solution that's going to get you farther faster, right? So if you're the Air Force and you've got, 1.05 million end users, right? You can't, in a holistic sense, use the same tools you would use for 1,000 users. So what are some of those conversations look like when you have those?
So the first thing is that you have to get them to understand where they actually are right now, right? Because again, going in saying, "Hey, I'm here to sell a product. Here I am to sell you a capability." That's not the, I don't think you wouldn't take that from somebody who basically came in and said, "Hey, I need another room on my house for my family," and they're like, "Let's just pull the whole thing down and start from scratch," right? You have to get there in a certain way. So I think that my response to that is that, we engage with where they are. We show them, right, how the tools they have map to. We facilitate the conversations of their existing team so they understand, like, they can see the pain in the eyes of their own team saying, this is going to be heavy lift. We bring in the existing OEM to have the conversation with the customer. And then if they get to a point through guidance, through visibility and insight, through conversations where they're like, "Hey, I do need to level up at this time. It makes sense for me to make that jump now." And then essentially we bring in, the capability with the OEMs that meet their standards and needs. And again, it is up to them to make that decision. Mm-hmm. But we show them how, again, in a lab environment, how this works together, how it achieves that, how it will accelerate, how the simplicity of implementation, how quickly it can be installed, set up, and deployed, and takes away the administrivia headache. Again, that's one of the reasons why we like to work with Zscaler, right? It allows us to be a force multiplier for the customer in regards to these sorts of deployments when they solve these sort of problems. And technologies like that, like technologies that work with other technologies that get it. Like, I'm here to help you solve your problems or solve your security challenges, are a real benefit in these conversations, because there is a platform play in a lot of cases, and there's a place for that, right? I want to simplify my tech spend. I want to have an ecosystem where there's compatibility from end to end. That's great, but Zero Trust is not that. You can't achieve it all. So you need to pick players in your ecosystem that integrate, that play well, that are talking to one another, right? It's not, and I think this is one of the frustrations we hear from the customer, is like, I have to do all this work to understand this and figure this out. Or I have to trust, have faith that the salesperson who walked in the room and said, "Yeah, this will work," and out of the box. I'm a big one of those fans of, like, batteries not included or batteries included at Christmas, right? I don't want my kids sitting down there and I didn't buy the batteries for them to play with that tool. So one of the things that we were very passionate about with the mapping exercises that a lot of the OEMs did was, okay, what's out of the box? What do you help them with, and where do they have to buy other technology to plug into your technology to achieve that? So
I think even on the flip side, they may have the technology already. They might just not be utilizing the licensing or the feature set of it to you know, to meet some of the
and we see that a lot. Absolutely.
Yep. So that's something else that we talk with customers about as well. So
yeah, we got into a conversation the other day about Donald Rumsfeld, known knowns and known unknowns, and like there's this category relative to technology about these unknown knowns. About you've gotten this inherent feature capability in a product you already have implemented and installed. It's a licensing feature away, right?
Yeah.
You can go take a massive pivot and coordinate different products, but a lot of times there's something in the stack that you can turn on. They don't have the notion, by the way, that it can come back and check one of those individual boxes against the 152.
We get that a lot. To attach to this conversation a little bit. So, you know, we know we're going into a brownfield type conversation with it, you know, because again, it's not, you already have elements of this, and they start to shake their head. Oh, yeah, you're right. We're following these standards, and we've been doing this for years. So I'm like, look, sure, it's got a new name, but you've done this before, right? Mm. This is a rebranding of some of the principles that you've had in the past, right? Defense in depth and what have you.
Sure.
But it's a lot more directed. It's a lot more clear for you, and you've got more guidance potentially than you've had before. I mean, obviously, we've got NIST out there, but it's more of that end-to-end strategy that we talked about. But we do get customers now like, okay, well, Red River, you've now mapped out all of these capabilities and all these technologies. I'm here, and I've got, you know, orange, red, 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 green, green, orange, red, you know, across different pillars. What would I need to buy to get to the green, right? So this sort of greenfield conversation of like, you know, if I created a parallel universe, what would I buy end-to-end in my tech stack, right? Because there is redundancy, and, you know, a lot of individual teams and missions have bought tools for a specific thing, and then they buy another tool for another specific thing. Right? Getting back to this use case sort of idea is like, I need you for this, and I need you for this. And once we get in there with them and say, hey, your combination of this technology and this technology that you already have, if you increase the licensing or if you implement it correctly, you're done, right? Let's move on, right?
Well, one of the things I get into as well, right, we talk about, you know, how do I get farther faster? Right, and you don't want to, like, out of nowhere, recommend an individual piece of tech swap. Right, but what I run into with a lot of these individual product selections is, I think every individual technology you run into has a baseline level of capability that you then get to determine its mission impact by dividing it by its complexity. Right, so if I have this amazingly powerful product and it takes 50 people to run. Okay, well then that is, but by the way, if I can get that same capability and it takes three people to run, well, that's a net benefit and, right? So what I see in the industry right now is a lot of the cloud services that are out there, selfishly Zscaler that fits in the mix, tend to kind of raise the roof on that inherent capability relative to it. The way I talk about it too is I talk to people about, like, you've got a number of budgets in your group, right? You have your CapEx budget, you have your OpEx budget. But I bring up the term human intellectual capital. Right, like you have a human intellectual capital budget about, you've got X number of super, super smart people in your organization. How do you want to spend them? Right, like, do you want to spend them running down hallways with thumb drives on Patch Tuesday and doing upstream and downstream effects? Or do you want them doing real-time, like, cyber effectiveness? By the way, they don't like doing the patch management. They like doing the cyber stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So when you get into these scenarios, what are some of the ups and downs that you run into in these conversations about, I'm going to make a recommendation to make a change relative to this pivotal platform? Like, how often does that human intellectual capital piece come into the conversation to be able to have real effect on a customer?
It's a great question. I think, look, in a perfect world, we all want to level up, right? We you know, this is one of the beautiful things about AI is everybody's sort of, oh, please, right? I mean, if I could get my people out of the trenches every day, patching, looking, you know, threat hunting, looking for, you know, just playing whack-a-mole with alerts and different items that have been identified in my network, and even putting together the reports around incidents, right? I have to go to this system and then that system, and I have to collate that together. And then, I mean, some of the power we're seeing with embedded AI within some of these tools to help the threat analyst get to a conclusion quickly, right, is extremely important. So, you know, I think what we have is we have a legacy world that we live in where most people are so used to being in those trenches that that's just, they've surrendered to it, right? And then there's the hope of, like, you know, there'll be this miracle, you know, either a single platform end to end, right? You know, let's buy me some zero trust, right?
Yeah.
Or this concept that AI will take care of everybody and I'll only need one person in the seat for my whole security team, right? So I think that, you know, again, the wish is there, the will is there, that, you know, people want to get there, but I think there's a bit of we're still in a bit of a gap there, right? Mm-hmm. of the reality of where we are and the understanding. And look, we have more tools than we have people that are fully trained to fully utilize them, implement them, and look, squeeze every bit of juice out of it, right? I mean, that's part of the issue we're seeing in the seat is mm-hmm. most of the people are there that sort of have an idea or an understanding of all of these tools, but they can't optimize any of them, mm-hmm. right? And that's, again, part of the level up conversation we're having when we go through and say, hey, did you know this technology could do this for you, which meant that you didn't have to do this and you could move into it? They don't have enough time in the day to do all the training, to have the relationships with all the OEMs they have in their tech stack to get to that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's a powerful conversation. It's like, hey, what if I could give you time?
By the
way, for your super smart people, what if I could give them time
yeah.
to repivot against
this stuff? Yeah.
We don't have time to look at it. No. It's a short investment in time up front, but the return on this investment from a time perspective is massive. And the other thing that we run into, especially with DoD, it's interesting, right? Because you talk about cloud, the immediate word that comes after it is scale, right? So
yep.
I can it's scale and yep. agility and mm-hmm. reduce management relative to, like, I do SaaS where I can. I never thought people would give up their Exchange servers, but when was the last time I saw one, right? Everybody's kind of
yeah.
mentally
yep.
made that hop from
yes.
from one side over to the other, right? But in the DoD, right, there's this notion of, well, I want to have the same solution for all of my individual components, right? And there's some places where cloud's not necessarily a viable solution, right? I'm not going to get into, like, classifications and areas and network structures and stuff like that. Are there scenarios where you're talking about, hey, to get the most done the fastest, I'll recommend a cloud solution for this huge bank of users that have the ability to use the cloud at this compliance level, and then there's a pocketed conversation I might have for tactical, or I might have
Absolutely.
For classified, or could you break that down, like what that conversation looks like a little bit?
Well, again, we're meeting the customer where they are, right? So
yeah.
whether it's a nip or sip or, you know, whatever systems or environments they have. But yeah, I mean, part of Quent's team's role particularly is to understand what the challenges are of the customer, mm-hmm. how, you know, quite often when you walk in the room, they'll tell you what the solution that they need is, and
right.
then we're like, whoa. What's the problem? Let's start with the problem.
Right.
And then we basically work through, okay, so, you know, I call it the five whys. And why do you do that? And why do you do that? And why do you do that? Why do you do that?
Yeah.
And that conversation that Quentin team have allows us, you know, again, because we're a very engineering-focused business, mm-hmm. to sort of say, okay, I think we can come back to you with some architectures that will accelerate your ability to solve this problem, to remove. And then, of course, we have people on our staff to get into these more sensitive conversations and recognizing, okay, the 80-20 rule. Okay, so you've basically applied the 20% problem to the 100% mm-hmm. of what you need to do. Let's break this down. It sounds like we can really implement something successfully and quickly
mm-hmm.
that can give you the efficiency, and we can break off that part,
mm-hmm.
and we can stovepipe it. You know, we can control it, ring fence it is the better mm-hmm. word, right? And support it in this very unique way or this creative way. And that's, again, where we work with our OEMs. And like, hey, we've got this very specific thing. We think we can bolt these three things together
mm-hmm.
and really create something that is scalable, repeatable,
yeah.
you know, for the customer, and still get to roll out a sort of a cloud solution or a solution that can quickly address that problem. And again, that's one of these things of having the confidence in the conversation to say, I know you've been thinking about this a lot, but mm-hmm. you've been thinking about it through a lens of having to deal with that pain. We're coming in, we don't have to carry that pain with us. And we have the perspective of over 200 different cybersecurity vendors and implementations in commercial and civilian and SLED and DoD. So we have a slightly different way of looking at the world when we come in the room
yeah.
than potentially the customer, I guess.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, I mean, so it's funny. I leverage the conversation about the five whys all the time. And it gets really interesting because when I'm talking to a customer, it's like, I'm just there to help at the end of the day. Like, I want to help. And the weird cultural part of the conversation is, again, go back to thoughts and beliefs. A lot of people have a lot of beliefs where maybe they should have some thoughts, right? And it gets it gets tricky to break that part of the conversation down. And I find myself kind of teeing up the why question a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I'll say, hey, the next question I'm about to ask, I'm not asking it flippantly. It's going to sound flippant. I mean it honestly, because I have a lack of understanding and I think I can help, but I want to understand. Mm-hmm. And my question is, why? Mm-hmm. And then they go, oh, wait, like, because sometimes why seems like, well, I'm challenging you. Mm. I think what you did might have been wrong. And it's like, no. I can't help if I don't understand.
Yes. Right.
I can't. And by the way, I'm not going to be understood until I understand. Let me take 90%, just the way you guys are doing with the 4-hour interviews. If I don't understand this environment, you shouldn't trust faith. Then I'm going to be able to give you actionable intelligence on how we think we can make progress in a granular way. Mm-hmm. Right. But I run into that quite a bit. One of the things, and I'll come back around to this one. You know, I'm in a really interesting spot. So I manage all the DoD and IC pre-sales engineers at Zscaler, right? So we're a cloud company, right?
Yep.
And I talk and I have a lot of interactions. People might not know this with like all of the other major cloud companies that are trying to service DoD, right? And the notion is, well, if I'm in a tactical scenario and I'm in the DDoL scenario, or I'm in a, you know, classified type scenario, well, I have to look at software and hardware. Right, and I could use cloud for some of that other stuff. We're all kind of working around. I'll bring up identity vendors and not mention them by name too, right? But how do we as cloud companies solve for DDoL specifically, right? Because DDoL mean cloud went away. Mm-hmm. So at Zscaler, we've solved for it. And if anybody has any, you know, questions or you want a debrief on that around the whole zero trust piece, like we went and figured out the DDoL piece. We're working with other people so that their integrations work around the DDoL piece. But is that a component relative to where you guys are working around this? Because I know that there's a lot of value in these cloud solutions. Do you hit that stumbling block sometimes of like, yeah, but that wouldn't work for DDoL? Because I know in the industry side, like, we're trying to fill that gap as quick as we can, but there's always new data.
Yeah, I mean, like James said before, I think it just comes down to, you know, each person's mission and what they're looking to do and where they're starting from. And then we go out and see what meets their needs. But that's definitely something. Some people say, you know, we don't want cloud, or that's not going to meet it for security reasons and stuff like that. So that is something we definitely come across. Mm.
Yeah, look, I think our position is, again, we always go back to the OEM and our partners to ask them what is the art of the possible, right? Because, again, in my seat, I can't assume I'm in every conversation you're having and solving every problem. Mm-hmm. And you're also, I mean, part of what I love about the lab experience for us, right, for Red River, is we're working with the OEMs and they're giving us pre-release access to certain capabilities. You know, we know that's not in the market yet, but customers may be influenced about making some decisions around holding off or moving forward. Because really, we all want to future-proof our buying decisions or what we're rolling out. So if we can make a decision that we're like, hey, this will serve me for the next 10, 15 years, and it'll grow and develop and be able to meet my needs, we're excited about that, right? Sure. We do that with hardware all the time, right? And we want to do that with our software as well and now with our cloud solutions.
Right.
So, you know, from our perspective, you know, we consult with the OEMs and sort of say, hey, you know, what could you do in this situation? What's the art of the possible? You know, surprise me.
Yeah.
Right?
So question for you, right? So you and me are in the same role where, you know, we're not the man in the arena. We're the guy making sure that guy's got the right flavor of Gatorade. our job is to basically help out these folks who are out having those individual conversations. How does it usually land at your level? Or maybe the best way to ask this is, what's the best way to engage with Red River? Like, people have listened to the episode. They're like, wow, I need some of that. Mm-hmm. Like, should they go through, just find their Red River SE and know it's a service available to all of their individual people inside Red River?
So we actually offer this no-cost assessment to all of our customers. We've actually been brought into one, and it's grown to multiple people within that, you know, military organization and stuff like that. So, yeah, reach out to us. We'll get you aligned with the sales engineer and James's team who do the assessment. The first one, and I'll let James kind of go more in depth in this, is usually on site. We come on site, meet everybody, kind of go over what Zero Trust is, you know, the timelines and stuff that James said. Following that, we do a questionnaire, which is usually a virtual one, where we get all the stakeholders of the technology and ask them questions and find out how they're doing, what they're doing. And then we just come back with the deliverables, which kind of say the, you know, where they are, the green, orange, and red and stuff like that. So, yeah, that'd be a good good starting point to reach out to me.
Very cool. Do you guys make house calls? Like if we have customers and they're like, yeah, I know, yeah, Red River, but I want Quentin. Like, can I get out on site?
We do try and support all requests for Quentin.
There's not a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, very good. So, guys, Tom, do you have anything else to
I'm good, Tom. Thanks.
To TN add in? So, guys, thank you very much for listening today. This has been Zero Trust Given. By the way, our hosts that we have in the show will have their contact info and ways to contact them throughout the text of the post. You can, or the podcast release, you can go see them there. Also, please remember, we have zerotrustsgiven@gmail.com. If you have any comments, you want to interact with the show. If you want to send me another email about, hey, Tom, stop sniffling into the microphone, feedback is always welcome. I apologize. We're still kind of tearing up the last of the winter season. You might not be listening to it in winter, but that's a release schedule thing. But if you have any ideas or thoughts for the show, we very much appreciate it. Also, if you have any questions that you think are like really interesting Zero Trust questions, if we read them on the show, if we discuss them on the show, Tom and I are working with our marketing department trying to put together some Zero Trust Given care packages, right? So we'd love to interact and have more interaction with the staff. But I want to thank you guys. Any parting words before we wrap up the show today?
Not for me. I appreciate the time, and thanks for having us on.
It's been great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. And this is Tom Tittermary and with my wonderful co-host, Tom Gianellos. And that's it for Zero Trust Given this week. Thank you, guys.